Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreak.com. I am Kenneth Amanduri, and I'm joined today with a returning guest, Mish Shedlock of MishTalk.com. You can find his work there, all of his work. I think he said on our last interview, he's posted, blogged, in one way or another, connected with his audience for like some record. You'd have to remind me exactly how long that was, but
2003. And hey,
my goodness, every single day since 2003, yeah. Even the days he was sick, tired, and just maybe over
in Ireland.
I mean, my goodness, the passion you have for this is incredible, and I really admire that. And so, looking forward to a great conversation today. Lots to talk about. I mean, I don't know. I know we don't want to get too deep into this latest news of, you know, the Derek Chauvin thing. It's kind of a crazy world right now. It's just goes to show, again, referring back to our last interview, the division that we have in our world. And, you know, Trump just made his first public interview appearance on Sean Hannity a couple days ago. And again, just, you just see what's happening, his comments on what's going on with Biden, the border, the spending, the taxes, and just, again, the divorcing relationship of a country we have, and that's what it's become. So without any further ado, Mish, thanks for coming on the show with me once again.
Oh, pleasure to be on. First off, I told Ken I didn't want to discuss this, but I'm willing to make a brief comment on it. I don't believe politicians, left or right, you know, have any business going out there inciting the public. I chastised Trump for doing that. I chastised Maxine for doing that. And well, let's just leave it at that. It did not go over well in some places, and here I'm back on MishTalk.com. Let's put it that way. I'm still associated with the Maven, and they've treated me fair. And I want to point out that this was a joint decision, that because I talk about politics and the Street.com did not want to discuss politics, that I am back on my own channel. And you know what? I'm happy to be on my own channel. I can say whatever I want.
Well, you're free to say what you want here as well. Let's talk about the Fed stimulus. And you had a great chart of what it looked like from bank lending and the response to the Fed stimulus. And it really started to look like that the bank lending is tapering off compared to the amount of stimulus that's happening. And I think you use this term too. It's kind of like pushing on a string. I mean, we're getting to that point, the proverbial pushing on a string. We're not seeing the response come that is expected when you put trillions of dollars into the systems like they probably assume should happen.
Well, it was not expected in most quarters. It certainly is what was expected in this quarter. People don't understand how lending works. And I was like surprised. What triggered the article, by the way, Ken, was an article on Bloomberg. And the teaser to that was, look what banks are doing with their money. You know, and they were, you know, talking about the deposits going up. Well, the deposits going up are directly related to QE. Okay. And I posted a link to a New York Fed article that discussed this. This should be widely known, but it isn't. And the fact is, banks don't lend from deposits in the first place. They don't. They never have. They never will. But if you look at a chart, it looks like it happens that way, because normally, until the Fed started launching all of this QE over 10 years ago now, right? 2009, that lending and deposits went up. Actually, what happens is lending goes first, the deposits come later, the money gets recirculated, and if the banks are missing any reserves, the Fed supplies them. That is the way it works. And the important point here is, Ken, banks lend when under three conditions. They're not capital impaired. Well, okay, the banks aren't capital impaired now. The Fed bailed them out, thank you. They lend when they believe they've got a creditworthy borrower. Alternatively, they're willing to lend even if the borrower isn't so good, if they believe that the asset price will hold up. Now, what happened in the housing bubble? Well, they believed that home prices would hold up. So even though they damn knew well that they were lending to crappy customers with liar loans, they made the loans anyway, because if they foreclosed, they thought the home price would be there. Well, they learned a pretty lesson on that. So meanwhile, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is doing most of those loans. So, you know, what's happening with commercial loans? I ask right now, is this a good time to start? This is what I said in my blog. Is this a good time to start a restaurant? You know, do you want to start a mall now? If you're a bank, do you want to lend to a mall now? So the bread and butter of corporate lending has gone down. And this Bloomberg article comes by and makes it appear that banks are hoarding cash. There's actually no such thing as hoarding cash. The Fed shouldn't even want banks to make crappy loans, right? Because
hoarding cash,
we've been there and seen what happens when they do.
Yeah, that's a funny way to put it. I never thought about that. Imagine you telling me you're hoarding your cash because I'm saving it or I'm not spending it. Like, why would you wouldn't describe someone's personal lifestyle in that sense, but yet a bank, a supposed private business, which obviously is married into the government policies and the government monetary, policy. I mean, it's not really private anymore. They have this description of banks hoarding cash, but in reality, savings should be a good thing. And
it should be.
There should be a market price for interest rates for them not to hoard that cash, right?
Exactly. And the weird thing is, the Fed crammed this money down their throats, even though they have no use for it. Why do they have no use for it? Actually, they have a slight use for it. The Fed pays interest on excess reserves. So the Fed gives them cash. They don't lend it out and they still make money on the whole deal at taxpayer expense, of course. The way to do that is not pay interest on excess reserve, which was a shoddy notion in the first place, especially when the Fed is cramming interest rates, cramming money down their throats that they have no need for, because they have no creditworthy borrowers. That's what it points down to. And if you actually think about that, that's sort of a deflationary thing. The one thing propping up the economy really well is actually housing. And there's a huge demand for housing, but it's Fannie Mae, and Freddie Mac and maybe some private lenders that are in that business, not banks. So, a reader asked me, Mesh, what if the banks got back into mortgage lending? What difference would it make? Instead of Fannie Mae making loans, the banks are now making loans. There's not going to be any more or any less of them, no matter who does it. But it's because the banks are out of that business now, and it's almost all entirely Fannie and Freddie, that we see these weird curves. And it's kind of interesting. Not that the metric makes any sense, because I pointed it out. But bank loans and leases are down to an all-time record low in the history of money. The data on Fred goes back to, I don't have my chart handy, but it goes back to something like 1973 or something, we're at an all-time low. And then you have,
How is that measured? At an all-time low, based on what?
The chart was simply, I did the calculation myself, but it matched actually the calculation on Bloomberg. What you do is you take in billions of dollars, the amount of loans and leases, okay? That statistic is available out there on Fred. And you take deposits, you know, at the banks, and you just take the two numbers and divide them. You know, if you get good at Fred, and I'm pretty good at Fred now, you can actually do that calculation, you know, right there in Fred and produce a chart. Instead, I downloaded the data and created my own chart, but I matched what they came up with and I matched what Bloomberg came up with. So I'm quite certain the number is right. And as we're talking about in percentage terms here now, there's never been a lower ratio, and that lends to the banks are hoarding cash.
So, and just to analyze that, you know, is it because there's a lag? Is it just a matter of, hey, the banks haven't had time to do anything with it, so it's going to come? You know what I mean? Like, how is this? It's because obviously the money got injected into the system so quickly, so fast.
It's just that they don't have creditworthy borrowers. You know, if you're a bank and I come to you and I say, I want to start Misha's restaurant, you're going to say no, and you're going to be right, and you shouldn't make that loan. You know, we got too many restaurants now anyway, and we still don't have a recovery. And malls are in trouble. You know, banks traditionally have made a lot of loans to fund malls and to fund businesses in malls. Now, if you're a business, you can think about it from, you know, the business aspect. I'm Bloomberg. You know, I have office space. Guess what? I don't need all of that office space anymore. Why? Because people are working remotely. That's why. So offices aren't expanding, right? Malls aren't expanding. Restaurants aren't expanding. You really want to start a nail salon here right now? I don't think so. So that's why the demand for loans is low. If the demand for loans was there, banks would make them whether they had the reserves or not. That's the important factor. Banks don't lend from deposits. They don't lend from reserves. Banks lend when they've got a borrower. And the way the money works, they coin money into existence simply by making the loan. You know, that's the way the system works. So creating excess reserves, as the Fed has done, and the ECB tried to do as well. The ECB has had negative interest rates now for years. They thought that they would get banks to start lending if they punished banks, actually, with a negative interest rate. Banks in the Eurozone are suffering because of negative interest rates. They owe the ECB money because interest rates are negative. Now, the ECB thought that this was going to stimulate lending, even though they have to pay the ECB money. On the money the ECB crammed down their throats, they're still not making loans. Why? Because there are no creditworthy borrowers that want them. They'd rather pay their 0.1% to the ECB than make a bad loan and have the whole damn thing go sour. That's what's going on. Wow. This is not pushing on a string. This is pushing on air.
Imagine if real estate did actually go in the opposite direction. I can't even fathom it, because if people didn't have real estate, because there's a lot of people spending money because, hey, their house went up $100,000 in 3 months. So they're like, oh, I could spend 20 grand on putting a, you know, something in, doing landscaping, fixing up the kitchen. And that's stimulating the economy to a certain degree. But if you didn't have that rising asset inflation going on, that's stimulating the economy. I mean, imagine what that would do. And it's, at some point, we have to assume something is going to turn around, unless they just continue to inflate and they keep putting the assets in the hands of the ultra 1%. At some point, you know, the big hedge funds and the, you know, this institutional money they're going to own all the real estate, and everyone's just going to rent from them.
You know, that was an interesting comment, you know, that you just made, Kent, because the Fed, more than anybody, maybe not more than Biden, screams about income inequality. And actually, I don't mean Biden, I mean Elizabeth Warren, but it's the same class, right? They scream about income inequality, including the Fed. And that's the point that I want to make. The Fed is the single biggest reason behind wealth inequality. That's the word I meant, not income, but actually both. The everything they do, they bail out the banks, the wealthy. By bailing out the banks, they're bailing out the CEOs of the banks, they're bailing out the stockholders. Who is the stockholders? Ain't the 1%, is it? It's not the 10% either. It is the 1%, and it is the top 10%. It's not the bottom 90%. You know, certainly the bottom 20% have almost no assets at all. So when the Fed comes by and bails out the asset holders, it's very trickled down. Who's getting it? Well, the people with first access to money. Who's that? Banks, government, hedge funds, the already wealthy, right? By the time money trickles down, and eventually it does, by the time money trickles down, we see something happen that happened in the Great Recession. By the time the average person could get a loan, you know, they were all liar loans. So by the time the average person can participate in the bubble is about ready to blow up. Mm. That's what happened before. I swear to God, it's going to happen again. Don't ask me when, because this has gone on way longer than I expected.
What are your thoughts on gold and silver? Looks like gold had a good day today. You know, silver is still below $30 though. And seems like it's just underwhelming in terms of what we're seeing happen in other assets, real estate, stock market.
It is underwhelming compared to what happened. But the inner, and I'm ready to do a post on this. In fact, other than I had site issues today, not related to my move back to Mishtok, but just in general that prevented me from doing some posts. But post in the top of my mind, and you almost read it here, was what's happening here with gold. And but the thing that triggered it in my head was, I believe, last Thursday. I am looking at the biggest, everyone is looking at the biggest retail sales beats and the biggest housing beats. All this economic data is beating expectations like mad. And I go to look at interest rates and I'm like, God, what's going to happen to these things? Wrong. Interest rates plunged. I think we might, and with it, gold took off. I'm getting ready to write a post along those lines, and I'll have some interest rate charts. Those might be kind of interesting. I think the correction in gold might be over, and at least based on, you don't want to base something off of one day, but as you noticed, it continued today. I think if the correction is not over, I believe the worst of the correction is over.
We're definitely at a higher low in terms of where we've been, obviously coming off of where we were in 2015. But my goodness, I mean, if it's just comparatively to what we've seen in Bitcoin and the stock market and real estate, it's demoralizing to that degree. But I'm very optimistic that we're in a spot where else do you go? I mean, crypto is through the moon. You know, it's like, where else do you go to really capitalize on what is truly undervalued in this environment?
Yeah, that's the key word right there. You know, and this is a conversation that came up with a friend. Well, gold has been in the shitter for, you know, whatever. And I said, well, when do you want to buy it? Do you want to buy it when it's at its all-time peak? And what happens is people either chase at the wrong time and then bail at the wrong time, or they always want the price they can get yesterday. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happens in the housing market, you know, in the big bust. You know, people went to sell their house. You know, they had an offer. you know, it was $20,000 or whatever, lower than what they, you know, hoped for. Well, they don't take it. Well, the next offer is 40,000 below, you know, the offer, you know, that they had. Now they're happy. Now they want that 20. Oh, if I can just get that 20, I'm going to wait to get 20. Well, then the next offer, you get the idea here. The thing is, people like to invest in bubbles when they're going up. You know, when gold was at, truly at bargain prices, and you know, and when it fell from 1900 to like, you know, 1100. I think I did a post then. My timing when to get out has not been that great. Actually, I don't intend to get out. I intend to hold it. But when I do a post and I recommend buying, those posts have generally been pretty good. And I told people, you know, get in right here. 1100 looks like a really good price. Now, true enough, I never said get out at 2000. But you know, we're back at one of these times here. We've had a sell-off. I like the price here. I like the action in treasuries. I understand what's going on. I don't think the strength of this economy is as good as everyone thinks. And this is what happens. You know, when whatever asset prices are going up, people plow into them. So they plow into stocks and they plow into junk bonds and they plow into all this other stuff. And then gold gets left behind. You know, as it did again, you know, this is just, you know, this is what, you know, happens, you know, to gold, you know, go all the way back to Brown's bottom, you know, when the stock market was going gangbusters right before the NASDAQ crash. You could hardly give gold away. You know, Gordon Brown, you know, sold gold at, you know, from the Bank of England, all it, I believe, you know, something like $250 an ounce. That sentiment marked the bottom. And we've also, for whatever reason, had, you know, had faith in central banks. Actually, ultimately, gold is a measure of faith in central banks. So if gold was, you know, sold off here, it was, well, okay, either the central banks had things under control. That's one way to view faith in central banks. Or alternatively, that people had faith that the central banks could keep the stock market up forever. The you know, two different sorts of measures of faith in central banks. But, you know, that was what was propelling, you know, the stock market. At some point, sanity sets in, just like it did in 2007 with Adam. And I can't tell you that time is now. However, just from judging from the reaction in treasuries and gold, it looks like a good time to get into gold. If, you know, if that's an asset, you know, class that you want to be in. Now looks like a good time again.
Let's talk a little bit about that sentiment shift. And I'll point out, I mean, we are seeing people that once loved gold, but look at gold now. If gold is not going to move with trillions of dollars of stimulus, what we've seen in with COVID, just the craziness over the last year, gold is just, it's a relic. It's changed. It's fundamentally not what it historically has been.
Oh, it's,
and people are throwing in the towel.
It's always historically what it's been. You know, I see things, you know, there's the common theme out there. Oh, the dollar is going up, so gold is going down. I posted charts of that and it's pure bunk. Now, it's true in the short term. If you look on a day-to-day basis, if the dollar goes up, gold tends to go down. I don't think that happened the other day. I've got to go back and look at that though. But generally, that's a true statement. But the US dollar index has been right where it was now. And I'm going to make up some prices, but I think they're going to be close. And I think you can find that the gold is where it was now. It was 2000. Gold was also $1,500 an ounce. Gold was $1,100 an ounce. And I'm going to guess that gold was somewhere around $800 an ounce, all with the US dollar index, right where it is today. Well, how in the heck can anyone tell me that gold is a function of the dollar? Yet that is overwhelmingly believed. It's what the media sprouts. You know, there are other factors in play. And actually, if again, it comes back to what I believe is the true theme is gold does poorly when faith in central banks is high. Greenspan was considered the great maestro, right? I can't remember who named him that, but that was his, you know, title. And the Greenspan Fed, you know, had faith up in the Fed, and falling rates of inflation up into the point of deflation tend to be a pretty bad environment for gold. Here we've had the opposite. We've actually had rising interest rates. Those rising interest rates short-term spike the dollar. And yeah, we had a nice correlation of gold going down with the dollar going up, but it doesn't hold true in longer terms. So you just can't put your finger on one thing with gold and say, follow this or follow that, because it's a whole variety of things, but it really does come down to, you know, faith one way or another that the, you know, the people believe that the Fed has inflation under control, or the Fed is going to boost these other assets more than gold. And if that's the belief, people are going to invest in other assets more than they are gold. It's sort of logical.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a powerful thing. And we've seen what Bitcoin has done, and people are truly asking the question, has Bitcoin replaced gold? And I have to say, you know, that I...
The people asking that are the people in Bitcoin. I don't think...
Well, I'll just say this. I don't think Bitcoin is moving higher because it's replacing gold, or because it's a store of value. To the degree that that's what it is. I think it's moving up higher because it's just an early stage asset class, and you have trillions of dollars, you know, whatever you want to call it, moving into the space. So
earlier, late,
because there's more buyers than there are sellers.
But I would have told you that and been wrong 3 years ago. So, you know, don't trust my opinion on that. But, you know, by the time everyone is discussing it, and you know, we saw it crash from you know, what, 2,000 down to 20,000 down to 7,000, I think. I mean, you know, that was actually a good buying time because sentiment was washed out. But, you know, it's hard. You to invest in gold coin, Bitcoin, you have to believe in it. If I would have been invested in Bitcoin, there's no way I ever would have held it. The people who have done best with Bitcoin are those who got in early and said, you know, it's going to do this. And they were the true believers. Now, the person that got in at 20,000 and by the time is probably puking it at 7,000, unless they became a true believer somewhere along the line. Mm-hmm. So if I had it, I never would have held it. There's a lot of people that believe the story. They held it. A tip of the hat to them. I'm not going to take that away from them. I've commented on this before. Bitcoin is a free market construct. I have no objection to Bitcoin. I've done a lot of posts saying why I won't own it. I believe and still do that central banks could squash it if they wanted to. I expected them to do it by now. And guess what? I was wrong. So we'll see where it goes. I don't know. But, you know, with all this renewed found interest and everyone chasing junk bonds and now Bitcoin and stocks and literally anything that's going up, are we closer to the beginning or the end of this? And, you know, again, I've been wrong on this about when I expected things to burst, but we also had COVID come along and, you know, the Fed pumped tremendous amounts of money out there. And guess what? It inflated not bank lending, what the Fed wanted to do, but it inflated, and the free money from Congress to everyone, inflated financial assets. That's what happened. You know, gold was considered a relic. Gold didn't benefit much.
Well, Mish, it's been an interesting ride. I actually didn't realize that you were only on Mish Talks now. So
I'm off the street. I'm back to mishtalk.com. However, I'm still on the Maven platform, but I have not total control, but more control over what I can do and say.
Good for you. And I appreciate that. I appreciate your openness and your transparency here. You're always free to speak your mind on this platform. Although I might get shut down at some point here on YouTube. I expect that one day at one point or another, but it's either way, I'm open to that and we'll roll with the punches. But thanks so much for coming on the show with me today. I look forward to having another conversation with you in short order and getting an update on where things are. And I got to assume we are closer to the end than we are the beginning. And that resonates well with me in many different things. So again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Ken. It's a pleasure to be on Crush the Street, and we'll do this again. A lot of fun. Thanks.